With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Batter Up. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 65 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Surovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
Kellyanne has this week off. She's got some, I think she mentioned that she's, you know, dealing with adjustments to her various medications. And so she's tired this week. So hi, Kellyanne, out there in the podcast waves. We miss you. Yeah, she's off this week. So it's just Linda and I. But we actually have some Mets news to report. It's, you know, it feels like it's a quiet off season, but it's kind of not because of the ownership change. And there has been news on that front. So as we approach the month of November, the time is finally coming officially for the Wilpon era to come to an end. The Major League Baseball owners, the entire group, is expected to vote on Cohen's bid to buy the Mets on Friday. He's expected to be confirmed. There's really no, I haven't seen any sort of reporting anywhere that indicates that he's not going to get approved.
Well, there is one person.
There's one person, but it's not one of the owners. But yeah, he does have one no vote already kind of on the record because they had a smaller group of owners that voted. I forget, it was like a preliminary vote. And it was like a subcommittee or something. Yeah, it was a subcommittee and one of them voted no. And so he remains no. Is it Reinsdorf?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let me confirm that with the Google before I say that's true. Yeah. Jerry Reinsdorf.
He's the owner of the White Sox.
Yeah, he's right? The White Sox owner. He voted no. I don't know if there's any record, like any quote from him as to why, but
I think he has some connection to A-Rod, but I can't remember what it is.
Oh, that would make sense then.
I remember seeing something that he had a connection to A-Rod, but it slips my mind at the moment.
Yeah, so he had voted no on that subcommittee, and so he remains no. And then apparently there are two others on the fence. I don't think we know who they are. Disha Thosar reported that the vote is coming on Friday and that there were two on the fence, but I'm not sure if she wrote in her article who they were.
I don't think so. And then, of course, there's the de Blasio wrinkle.
Yes. So that's another wrinkle. Yeah, so just two owners were on the fence with one firm no vote as of Tuesday per sources. So in the article, it doesn't say who those people are. We know who the no is because of previous reporting. I don't think we know who these maybe people are. But yeah, so the owners aren't the roadblock here. They're going to vote him in. He only needs 22 of 29, and we only know of those three maximum no's right now, so it's unlikely that he will get voted down. However, there's a weird wrinkle where, oddly, Mayor Bill de Blasio has say in this, because Citi Field is on city-owned land, and so Bill de Blasio has to hand over the lease agreement for the land that Citi Field rests on in order for the sale to really go through. And de Blasio is like been weirdly cagey about this whole thing.
He said has his office like looking into it or something like that. That was the last thing he said. It was like cryptic.
Yeah, it was like, my office is looking into it and we need to make sure that we thoroughly investigate everyone that wants to do something with the city. It's like,
yeah, because there's like a morality clause or something where you can't be a felon and own the land. But yeah.
And even
Cohen
though Steve...
was never convicted.
Exactly. Even though Steve Cohen himself has never been convicted of financial crimes, his companies have been embroiled in all sorts of shady stuff on Wall Street, and like people under him have been convicted of financial crimes. And so there's that. Yeah, here's the exact de Blasio quote. "This is something our law department is evaluating right now. We obviously want to get a resolution on this very quickly. The deal is this. Because the land on the lands that Citi Field is on and the stadium belong to the city always has to have a role when there's an ownership change. There's a process for doing that. The law department is doing its due diligence right now," he continued. "I'll be getting a report from them soon. It'll just be based on the facts of the research they've done. And again, we'll speak on that very quickly."
But like de Blasio and the Wilpons having a morality clause in this sale is laughable, to say the least.
I know. And it's like, I think that this is almost like, and it's not like, I mean, you know, the Wilpons have been owning the team for pretty much like our entire baseball fandom, like our generation's entire baseball fandom. So we don't really like remember any like previous ownership changes, but like, yes, that is technically a thing, but it's a technicality that de Blasio seems to be like grandstanding about. It's like not, this isn't a thing that's really been employed to this extent in the past. So,
and who knows if it's really a thing or if it's just the media making it a thing, one media member in particular making it a thing.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, people keep making the media keeps making this probably a bigger deal than it is. And de Blasio, like, we know his personality. We know he likes to grandstand. That is not a political statement to say that. That's, you know, kind of his
MO. No, it's factual.
But I don't know. Like, I think it'll, I don't foresee this being an actual problem. Like, does de Blasio really want to make himself even more unpopular than he already is?
Oh my gosh. I think that would be the final straw. Like, yeah, I don't think he wants to go down that road.
But there was actually a very good on this whole thing. Not really on the, like, de Blasio situation or, like, you know, the ins and outs surrounding the sale, but on the like technicality and also the actual precise nature of Cohen's company's past. There was a really good story like this week written in the New Yorker about it by a reporter who like specializes on Wall Street reporting and has written a book about financial crimes on Wall Street. So that's worth a read, and I will link that in the tweets for this episode. But none of this is to say that Steve Cohen is not a shady guy. We've talked about this on the podcast before. Like, if Bill de Blasio really wanted to like take issue with some of the stuff that his company has done, then he has, I suppose, a right to do so, but I don't think that he actually has a problem with any of it. He's just, you know, trying to get attention.
Yeah. Well, and also find a billionaire who doesn't have skeletons in their closet.
Right, exactly. And like we've said many times on this pod, there are no angels here. Like, believe me when I say that this type of law department investigation into any one of these billionaires would find something or another, I'm sure.
Yeah. If it's not Cohen, it's just going to be somebody else and you're in the same boat all over again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But nonetheless, it doesn't seem like there's going to be an actual problem. But of course, we're getting all the how Mayor Bill de Blasio may hold up the sale headlines. And it's like, yeah, whatever.
Well, and also, apparently, Jeff Wilpon said goodbye to the staff. Yep. So it does seem like a done deal.
Yeah. So that was the other, like, quote, major Mets story to come out this week, is that not only are the like final details being hammered into place as far as the actual sale, and if Cohen's approved on Friday and this de Blasio thing is not a big deal, then like presumably he would take control of the team like in November. That would officially happen. Meanwhile, the Mets made a random like roster move, and which was hilarious.
Who's in charge?
He's like, who is doing this?
Like, seriously, who decided this?
Some intern just like typed it out and hit tweet, and they were like, sure, all right.
Yeah, that happened. And poor Ryan Cordell.
Poor Ryan Cordell.
Has been a victim of this mess where nobody knows who's in charge.
The illustrious Ryan Cordell era has come to an end. Ryan Cordell was placed on waivers, and the Mets claimed a former Cub.
Yes. Off waivers. I think it was an infielder?
Yeah, sounds right. I did not recognize his name when I saw it. But yeah, the Mets made a random roster move amidst all this while, like, no one seems to be exactly in power at the moment, which was pretty funny. but yeah, there was a Zoom call. It was apparently like a 15 to 20 minute Zoom call with various employees of the...
Can we just say how funny it is that 20 years can be summed up in 15 minutes?
Yeah, yeah. It was like, basically you're... like, sorry we didn't win more.
Yeah, it was like the highs and the lows, and the highs were basically Citi Field and the World Series. Like, after two decades, it's getting Citi Field built and getting to the World Series accidentally.
Yep.
So I'm sure the lows took up the most of that 20-minute Zoom call.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, to be a fly on the wall, though.
Yeah, it would be pretty funny to have heard.
Was it somebody in Slack who said they hope he cried?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he did. There was that weird thing where, like, everybody was saying, "You can't fire me. I quit." Like, he said he didn't want to work with Cohen. Well, it's like, buddy, nobody at Cohen don't want to work with you either.
Yeah, exactly. What was it? It was an Andy Martino tweet, but yes. It was like, where was it? And this isn't, for once, this isn't me actually like dunking on Andy Martino of MetsBlog.com. This is just, I am dunking on the tweet, but not because of him. Like, he's just
he's the one who had the information.
But
because I'm sure Jeffy texted him
exactly. So one more note from that: Jeff Wilpon will leave the organization when the sale closes. He has told colleagues he doesn't want to talk to the Cohen Group about any kind of involvement with Mets, even as family retains limited ownership stakes. So it's kind of confirming that, like, I mean, we probably, like, we kind of got like the hint of this already, that like this Cohen sale really was like he's gonna be in control of the team. The Wilpons are not gonna, because we know this is true because they fought over this initially. The first time Cohen was gonna buy the team, the Wilpons wanted to maintain control and Cohen didn't want that, and that's why the initial sale fell through. So this time the Cohen's getting his way, but like it's kind of funny that like it's being portrayed as like Jeff Wilpon not wanting anything to do with Steve Cohen, when it's like, LOL, as if he would have you.
Like, yeah. Like, yeah, I'm sure he doesn't want your opinion on literally anything.
Like, I'm not like, gonna give my opinion. It's like, oh no.
Yeah, like, what value do you bring at this point?
I tweeted, and I give Michael full credit for this tweet, because he was the one that said it. I mean, like, I found the GIF, but he was the one that said it, because when we were both, like, we were sitting next to each other on the couch, and he, like, showed me the Andy Martino tweet, and then he goes, stop, don't, come back. Like, this scene from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, yes, oh, no.
Yeah, so I tweeted the GIF of that, the very, like, sarcastic, like, stop, don't, no, come back.
Come back. Oh, what are we gonna do without you?
Gene Wilder's the best. But yeah, so that's immediately what we thought of. It was like, oh no, he's not gonna be involved with the organization, whatever shall we do?
Like, but yeah, Jeffy, like, it's really, do you have that high of opinion of yourself where you think they care?
Yeah, right.
Like, they literally could not care less.
Imagine having mediocre white man confidence. Imagine having fail son confidence.
Oh my god, I can't.
I wish you could, like, I need, like, an injection of that stuff on my worst day. Like,
yes.
Today was a pretty bad day at work just for various reasons, and, like, could have used a shot of some white guy confidence. That would have been great. Just like everything's gonna be fine. It doesn't matter that I look incompetent to these people over things that are not my fault, but I'm falling on the sword for. If I had the confidence of Jeff Wilpon, it wouldn't matter because my failure would just be like, whatever.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm rich. Tomorrow's another
day. It'll fix itself. It's fine.
Yeah, like everything's fine.
Daddy will take care of it.
Yeah. I own a sports team and it's like a toy to me.
Oh my god. I know I shouldn't get all worked up because after Friday he won't bother me anymore, but just his face is just so enraging still.
Yeah, I know. But like you said, like after Friday, I'm never gonna have to like even see his face again.
No.
Let alone think about what the Wilpons are doing after today. I mean after Friday. Isn't that amazing?
It is. It's like the weirdest feeling. Like, we're free. We are free.
We're
after
free.
After Friday.
It's pretty cool.
I think when they sold, like, when news that they sold, the gift I used was Bill Pullman from Independence saying, "This is our Independence Day." Like,
it's true.
That will be October 30th in Mets history. That is our Independence Day.
Yeah, we should make it a, like, Mets fandom holiday. Like, all Mets fans should be allowed to take off work on October 30th. And, I mean, I'm going to get back to this in my walk-off wins, but this is kind of the best birthday gift I could have possibly asked for.
Yeah, you can't top this, can you?
No, you cannot.
And it's a big one, isn't it?
Yes, it's my 30th birthday and on Thursday.
Welcome to the club.
And the day after, like, will be the official end of the Wilpon era, which is pretty cool. And hopefully, like, in future years, my, like, the week of my birthday, if not the day of, will be marking, like, World Series wins, you know?
Oh, we can dream.
I know,
they
big dreams.
They might still be playing on your birthday.
Right, they never play on my birthday. They have never once in my lifetime played on my birthday because even in 2015, October 29th was an off day between games like 3 and 4 or something. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, they've never played on my birthday either, but that's because it's in January.
Yeah, no team has ever played on your birthday.
No. And if it any year would be, it would be this year, and it's not even that wacky.
Nope, even COVID.
We haven't reached that point yet.
Oh, God. Imagine winter baseball. I mean, eventually all these stadiums are going to have roofs, so presumably they could play whenever they want in someday. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows how the
after times, if pre-COVID is the before times, is after COVID the after times?
AC after COVID.
Yeah.
Instead of AD.
AC and AD.
Yeah, we're just going to like restart the clock again.
I'm okay with counting. But just imagine the first day of your 30s, you're Wilpon free.
I know. It's going
to
be
so cool.
What
a way to start out.
I know. It's like, it can only go, it's scary because it only means it could go downhill from here. Although maybe if Cohen is actually a good owner, it'll go up from there.
And having Sandy Alderson on board, I'm totally on board with that.
I agree. It's good.
I always liked Sandy, so, and he at least is, I think we've mentioned this before, too, he's at least smart.
Yes.
And involved in baseball, unlike Jeffy, who's the exact opposite of that. So, I mean, it's a low bar to clear, but Sandy clears it and then some.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I guess the only, like, baseball-wide thing that's going on right now is the World Series. And I did want to talk about the World Series a little bit, even though I haven't been watching it much. I watched most of Game 5. I fell asleep on the couch before the end of it. Oops. The game's good.
I haven't watched any of it. The game's, so you're like, ahead of me.
Games go really late. They start at 8 o'clock and they're, you know, postseason games, so they're long. I'm not complaining about the length. I'm not, you know, I'm not Rob Manfred. But, you know, I just am, I guess I don't have the grad school grit that I used to have in staying up late. I am a night owl by nature, but even that can only go so far when you, like, work a normal work person schedule. Obviously, if I was more invested, I would have stayed awake.
Like, I just couldn't get into it. Like, I don't know, between, you know, the weird season and just, I don't know, like, the Mets being bad all year. Like, baseball wasn't fun this year, like, for me, at all. So the highlight of the year was the Wilpon selling, and that has nothing to do with what was going on the baseball field. So, I don't know, I just had no interest in. And I think that was also due to, I realized I could live without it when everything was shut down. So I found other things to preoccupy my time, and I don't think I'm the only one like that, because the ratings are really bad. So and that's probably not going to help Manfred, because now Manfred's still being Manfred and saying, oh, we still need to run her on second rule.
Yeah, we're going to keep all these things that people objectively hated. Like,
yeah, the expanded playoffs and the runner on second, the thing that everybody hated the most. He's like, nope, you know what? I think that was a good idea after all.
And somehow the DH, which is, like, I mean, I'm in the minority. I still don't like the DH in the National League, but that was, like, objectively the thing that the most, like, the fans, like, could most either, like, wholeheartedly approved of or at least were willing to swallow. And that's somehow not staying. But the other things that people hate more are staying.
And the other thing too is he's crying poor again. Like, oh, they're, like, deeply in debt after this year.
No.
Like, boo fucking who?
I know. It's like a theme that that's pervasive, because it was funny. Vaz had, like, the perfect comment, because he had to, like, post that article for Morning News this morning about, like, MLB crying poor, and he wrote, maybe if they had eaten less avocado toast and saved their money for a rainy day, they'd be okay. So it's kind of, like, so hard to have sympathy for these billionaires of, like, revenue. It's like, you still have TV revenue and you're still rich out of your mind, so I don't understand what your issue is. And, like, this is kind of, like, meandering away from the topic at hand, but we have the time, we're here. But, like, in a similar vein, like, I'm kind of seeing this a lot all over the place, and it's like, when there are people actually economically hurting because of this, like, people who are going bankrupt because they lost their job because of COVID, it's hard for me to sympathize with something like, and this is such a good, like, I think it's a really good parallel to, like, these Major League Baseball teams, because they're institutions that we deeply care about, but whose ownership is super greedy. And so it's like, it creates all these, like, ethical, like, you know, conundrums, because the bookstore Strand, which this is relevant to New Yorkers and people who root for the Mets, because Strand is, like, a really, like, a mainstay in New York.
Yeah.
It's, like, the biggest independent bookstore, that exists in, like, the country, as far as I know. And there, it's a beloved institution. I've been there. It's great. It's, like, a great place. I love it there. I would love for it to stay, but they've, like, posted, like, they've, like, basically made the alarm bell call out to everyone, being like, we are going to go out of business because of COVID if you guys don't step up and buy our books, essentially. But meanwhile, the owner of Strand is a multimillionaire, and she owns that building. So it's not like she's paying rent on the building. She owns the building.
Mm-hmm.
And she bought a bunch of Amazon stock with her PPP loan.
Yep.
It's like, well, like, how do you expect me, when you cry poor, how do you expect me to sympathize with that? How do you expect me? And, like,
and
yes.
She laid off a bunch of workers, didn't she?
Yes. Yes. Right before she applied for the loan.
Oh, because, come on.
Because part of the stipulation of you getting those loans is that you're trying to retain your workers. That's, like, part of.
Yeah.
That's part of it. And so she claimed she was like, I'm retaining my workers, but she laid them all off anyway. And she only rehired, like, a really small portion of them. And she bought a bunch of Amazon stock instead. Her direct competitor and the thing that is literally crushing her bookstore. Like, God.
It's mind-boggling. Like,
and I guess she's small potatoes compared to, like, Jeff Bezos. But you should actively be trying to, like, fight against what Jeff Bezos is doing. instead of buying stock in his company because you're taking advantage of the pandemic and you see Amazon stock soaring. Like, it's hard for me to have sympathy with that, despite the fact that I love your business. And same thing with these baseball teams. It's like, obviously I love baseball. It's like deeply ingrained in who I am as a person. I love it with my whole heart, but like, I can't like sympathize with these billionaire owners who are like, revenues, meh.
And it's so hard that it's the people in power that can ruin it for everybody.
Yep.
And, you know, what's going to happen to the players? What's going to happen to the minor leaguers? What's going to happen to, you know, which Cohen did come in and say he's going to pay all the city field workers, which, you know, kudos to him, no matter what he's doing, what the reason is behind it. But he's the only one so far. What's going to happen to all these other stadium workers?
Yeah, exactly.
And so they're the ones who are going to suffer, not these billionaires who are crying poor.
Exactly. And it's like, if you, again, like, these are the same people preaching to our generation who, like, are complaining about how we're drowning in student debt and can never afford to buy a house. Like, they're being like, oh, shouldn't have eaten all that avocado toast. It's like, yeah, well, maybe you shouldn't have eaten all that avocado toast. Maybe you'd be able to afford your goddamn baseball team. I don't know what to tell you, or your bookstore. Like,
or maybe you shouldn't have bought, like, 25 yachts, I don't know.
Yeah, or hundreds of thousands of dollars in Amazon stock. Maybe you should sell a few of those shares, make a few million, and then hire your goddamn workers
and you'll be
back,
fine.
Instead of being like, please buy one book from my bookstore.
Yeah, like, you know what?
If the responsibility on the consumer when, like, we can only do so much. Like, yeah, okay, I can buy a book at Strand. Michael bought a book at Strand, and so, like, because he felt he really wanted to save it, and I sympathize with that. It's like, I can do the same thing. Like, I can buy books, but, like, how much impact is that making as opposed to selling 2 shares of Amazon stock and rehiring your workers?
Seriously.
In the end, like, it's your fault if your business fails.
Mm-hmm. And she'll be fine, even if it does fail.
Right. She doesn't need this.
No.
It's the people that suffer if it goes under.
Again, yes.
It's the people who care about reading and who care about buying the books and all the people that work there and rely on that income. Those are the people that are suffering, not the owner of the bookstore.
It just shows, again, how baseball really is a microcosm of the United States. It always was and it always will be.
Not to mention that her husband is a Republican senator who's constantly socialist handouts. It's like, well, is your wife not now asking for
handouts? Yep.
Is your wife now not asking to be bailed out? Please. And, like, and this is relevant because this is the politics of all these people.
Yeah.
And suddenly when the tough gets going, quote unquote, for them, they're like, bail us out.
Well, you know, now that you've brought up politics, it did cross my mind that the Wilpons donated to de Blasio's embarrassing presidential campaign.
True, they did.
So how is there not a conflict of interest there of him reviewing these,
you know,
the sale? Like, yeah, I don't know. It just feels weird to me.
True. I didn't think of that, but that's really true. It is pretty icky.
Yeah, like, they directly gave you money for you to embarrass yourself.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess if, like, the sale, if he somehow magically holds up this sale, I guess that'll be something to look into at that point. But, yeah, he does have, like, you know, an interest there. That's true.
Yeah.
De Blasio does owe the Wilpons a certain debt.
And we know Jeffy doesn't want to sell to Cohen.
Right. Correct.
So,
Cohen's super rich and he has not much of a choice because they are, you know, broke as far as these millionaires go.
Yeah. Well, I think, are they even billionaires? Did they crack
the
Wilpons? A billion?
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, they will be once the sale goes through.
Yeah. It's the most an American sports franchise has ever been sold for in history. So,
well, so they can take their $2 billion and just never be seen or heard from again.
Buy some fucking Amazon stock. I get in trouble if I name this episode "Buy Some Fucking Amazon Stock"? Maybe. Anyway, I was ostensibly talking about the World Series. Like you said, to me, I'm of two minds about it. I don't think I'm gonna go quite as far as you, Linda. I don't think I feel quite as strongly as you do about, like, baseball. Like, you realized you didn't, and not to say that I think you're wrong. Like,
yeah,
there's no right or wrong way to, like, emotionally feel about all of this. But, like, because I don't really, like, have other sports to care about, like, life was really hard for me without baseball. Yeah. And so, like, I did get invested in the 2020 season, even though most of it was bad. But I haven't really watched the playoffs, and I normally do. I normally just put it on as background noise just when I'm doing other stuff. And this year I really haven't. But it hasn't really had much to do with, even though I do feel like this season was ill-advised and shouldn't have happened, I'll admit that hasn't been my motivation to not watch it so much as the expanded playoffs turned me off so much, and I hated the format so much that I haven't watched it. But objectively speaking, I mean, like, obviously, even though I'm not watching the games inning by inning, I'm seeing, like, I'm essentially watching them through Twitter, because I'm seeing everyone on baseball Twitter's reaction to all of it. And that has been entertaining in and of itself, because I enjoy the camaraderie with other fans. I enjoy seeing other people get excited. It's been fun to see, like, Dodgers and Rays fans react to various things that are happening. So,
according to Dodgers fans, they're so beleaguered.
Oh, yeah. It's so hard to be a Dodgers
fan. It's so hard me being a Dodgers fan.
God, I hope that's us soon. Like, anytime we complain, other fan bases are like, you have the richest owner in sports, and you've just won 5 straight titles. How dare you complain? The Mets are blessed. God, I hope that's us. Where we, like, someday we get so spoiled that we complain about, like, our three hitters only hitting 350. God, I hope that's us. Oh,
man, I forget what I tweeted about, like, JT Realmuto or the Phillies or something. I'm like, oh my God, I'm insufferable, and I love it.
I know, right?
Like, oh, like, we can afford JT Realmuto. This is awesome.
It's amazing. But that said, like, I said, I'm seeing all of the reactions, like, through Twitter, basically, and objectively speaking, these playoffs have been fun. And that is what is kind of sad about the fact, even though I can't blame anyone who, like, is checked out of baseball this year because of, like, A, the fact that this was kind of an ill-advised season to begin with, and B, like, 2020 is wearing us all down in various ways, and C, you don't like the changes that pandemic baseball has wrought, but, like, it's sad in a way that the ratings are so down, because this has been objectively a fun playoffs, just, like, as a neutral baseball fan, if you don't have, like, a rooting interest one way or the other in any of the teams, because, like, a lot of fun storylines have come out of these playoffs. Like, Randy Arozarena being, like, a playoff hero, it's someone who you've never heard of before this postseason, that is, like, the most fun shit. Like, inject that into my veins. Like, I love that stuff.
Was it Kate? It might have been Kate. She tweeted, he could win World Series MVP before Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, like, which is wild. He's already set a record for most hits in postseason history for any single player of anyone. Yeah. And he's some random dude named Randy. What?
And I think is he with Barry Bonds for, like, most home runs in a single postseason?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he's up there. But it's just, like, insane names that he's in company with.
Yeah. And, like, and I think in another fun, like, postseason narrative has been, I've really enjoyed seeing Clayton Kershaw be successful in the postseason and shake off his, like, you know, the cloud that had been hanging over him that he's, like, unclutch or whatever. Because, like, yeah, like, I don't really like the Dodgers. In fact, I don't want them to win the World Series. I want the Rays to win. But, like, I like Clayton Kershaw. He's awesome. And, like, good players are fun to watch. And like, the clutch stuff is so lame. And it's just, like, I've always felt like when people apply that criticism to Mets players, I always get really frustrated. So I get frustrated when I see it happen to other great players on other great teams, too. And I can only imagine how a certain contingent of Dodgers fans must feel about that. Like, imagine if, like, Jacob DeGrom, like, hadn't performed so well in the postseason, like, was only okay instead of great, and, like, had gotten his butt handed to him a couple times. Imagine the discourse among Mets fans and how they'd be, like, done and, like, over Jacob DeGrom forever.
Or if they just based it on his World Series appearance, right, and not everything he had done before that.
Exactly. And so, like, it's just, it's amazing to watch people, like, call one of the greatest pitchers of all time, like, one of the greatest pitchers of our generation, to be sure.
Oh, for,
like,
sure.
A big time bum because he hasn't been successful in the postseason. Finally, he's doing well in the postseason, which has been really cool to see. And he also set a record. So everybody's been talking about Randy Arozarena, but Clayton Kershaw set a record too. He has the most strikeouts of any pitcher in postseason history. Yeah. So
and
that's
he was
pretty
good
cool.
against us in 2015. Like, yeah, he was not the reason why they lost those games. He won game four. He was dominant game four.
Yeah, for sure.
On
People
short
always
rest.
Forget. So yeah, that's been cool to see. And then obviously, game four had one of the most, like, wild endings to a postseason game.
I'm kind of sad I didn't see that, because that is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I'm sad I didn't see it live. I watched the video, obviously, but I'm really sad
I didn't
see that live. But, like, that's pretty cool. It's, like, you know, and obviously, like, a lot of Mets fans, like, resonate with that because it's very reminiscent of the Getz by Buckner play. But even crazier than that, honestly, because
there was two errors on the play.
There were two errors, but yeah. I would argue that between the two teams, there were four major mistakes happening, yeah. And two of them rose to the threshold of being errors, and three of them were committed by the Dodgers. So basically, if you haven't watched this yet and you listen to this podcast,
it was bad base running on top of it, too.
Exactly. If you haven't watch this yet and you listen to this podcast, go watch it right now. Like, hit pause on the podcast, go watch it, come back. But yeah, basically what happened was, and also the fact that it's Brett Phillips of all people who, like, is like a random postseason hero, which is really cool. So random Brett Phillips is up with, like, the season on the line. He hits a single when he has to, and it should have just tied the game. So regardless of what occurred on the play, the game would have been tied because he hit a single with a runner in scoring position. So he hit a single. The tying run came around, and then the outfielder, like, bobbled, like, let the ball kind of get away from him in the outfield as it, like, yeah, rolled. It, like, rolled past him.
It wasn't Betts, was it?
No.
Okay.
No, it was, shoot. I forget.
I couldn't tell who it was.
I don't think it was Betts. Now you're having me second guess myself.
Because it was the right fielder, I think.
Why can't I?
Because that would make it even crazier if it was Betts, because Betts had been playing, like, insane defense this entire postseason.
I think it was Betts. I'm, like, rewatching the video, but I'm gonna mute it because I don't wanna. Oh, you're not showing the angle.
No, sure, see, that... I couldn't tell if it was him or not.
This video is not showing the correct angle. Anyway, ball got by the outfielder, and so then. It was a Arozarena, right?
It was a Arozarena, yeah.
Then he was the winning run. So he took off to try to score, which he wouldn't have done if the ball hadn't gotten by. But then he fell down. So, like, on the base
and did a somersault.
And did, like, a weird somersault situation. And so, like, he would have been dead to rights because they threw the ball, like, after the ball was recovered, an accurate throw was made. And Arozarena would have been dead to rights, except the catcher didn't know. The thing about this is, like, the catcher didn't realize that he had fallen down. So he didn't know how much time he had to make the tag. So instead of, like, if he had just paused, if he had known how much time he really had, and he had just taken his time and, like, gathered the ball and then turned to tag or Rosarena, he would have tagged him no problem, but instead he thought he didn't have a lot of time, so he went to make like one of those sweep tags and completely like missed the ball, basically. So then the ball got by him, and then Rosarena was safe anyway, but then like they still probably would have gotten Rosarena because he was basically like lying on the ground at that point. They still probably would have gotten him if Kenley Jansen had backed up home plate. And he didn't. He just stood there.
And then they asked him after a post game, he said, it doesn't matter. He said, who cares? It doesn't matter. Or something like that.
Who wrote that? Oh my God. Jack Baer of Yahoo Sports called it the double Buckner, which I love.
Oh, that is good.
The ending is the double Buckner because it was two errors.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
It was Chris Taylor.
Oh, Chris Taylor. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, Kenley Jansen had a bad quote afterwards. He was like, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care. It doesn't matter.
It's like, this is the type of stuff they teach you in Little League.
Deal. I was going to say, like, that's just like basic fundies.
Yeah, a certain Mets announcer would be beside himself about
fundies. Oh my God. Can you imagine
Keith trying to announce that? The fundies. He would have basically had an aneurysm.
Why isn't Keith on the post game? Like, they seriously need to bring Keith back.
I know. I miss Keith on the postseason.
I know. Although, I didn't see it, but I'm very happy Grandy was on the pregame.
Yes.
Because Grandy only deserves good things.
Love Curtis Granderson. Miss him on the Mets so much, but I'm glad that he's, like, staying involved in baseball and, you know.
I just want all the good things for Grandy.
Only good things for Grandy. Grandy for president, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. And, like, Grandy for, like, I don't know, third base coach, hitting coach, something. I just want back.
Steve Cohen. Bring back Granderson, you
bench
won't.
Coach. I think he would be a good bench coach.
He'd be really good. Yeah, he'd be a really good bench coach. I think he's expressed not a desire to coach, if I remember rightly.
And he's too good of an ambassador for the game. He needs to be in, like,
media.
Yeah. Or, like, an outreach.
He needs to be an antidote to all these old white men like Smoltz who, like, are like constantly about how good the game was back in my day and all this stuff.
Well,
like,
you know, I was thinking about this too. Like, every other sport has that one announcer where you know, okay, this is like serious business. Like, they bought in the big guns. Like, that's when you know it's like their big game. Is Joe Buck really that for baseball, or is John Smoltz really that for baseball?
Tom Verducci.
Yeah, Verducci. Like, they don't have that one distinguishable voice.
It's Joe Buck, I think.
Joe Buck. Or Costas. Like, it used to be Costas way back when. Yeah. But they don't have that one where it's like the GOAT of broadcasting for baseball. And I think that's something that is also seriously hurting the sport. Like, if you saw, I know you're not a hockey fan, but Doc Emrick just retired, which I'm very, very upset about. But he always called all the big games and he was just so good at it. And if you saw the reaction to his retiring at like, just everywhere, and it wasn't even, you know, just hockey, it was everyone, because he was just so respected, and he had a style that was recognizable, and you knew when he was calling a game, like, this was it, this was the big time. And I don't associate Joe Buck with that for baseball.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, like, baseball's national booths are, like, woefully inadequate.
Yeah.
It's really sad. Like, for all the, and I mean, I think part of it, I don't know how much of this is just, like, you know, just hire better people, frankly. But, like, I think part of it, a not insignificant part, is that baseball is so hyper-local in its culture.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, there are so many, like, local booths that are so beloved among fan bases, like Gary, Keith, and Ron, for example, but they aren't the only ones. They just get talked about a lot because they're, you know, in New York. They're in the New York media market, which is one of the bigger ones. But, like, there are a bunch of booths that are famously bad booths, but there are, like, there's actually a huge, like, bell curve, like, a wide...
Yeah, there's a gap.
Yeah, there's... lot of like really good ones, a lot of really bad ones too, but yeah, but like there's such variation between all the like local booths, and there's like so many good like local booths, but there's not a good national booth like at all.
And you know Joe Morgan just passed away, and a lot of that was, you know, he was the voice of my childhood.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know if he was any good, any bad, because I just knew Sunday nights I would hear his voice. And it brought me back to my childhood and hearing him call a game. And, you know, I had that connection with him. Like, I don't know if he, like I said, I was young, so I wasn't listening to, like, criticize the way he called the game. But I don't know if people associate Joe Buck with that. Like, does he have that connection with fans?
I don't really think so.
I don't either.
I do think that there's kind of a... There's been, and I don't know how much of this is, like, our own, like, corner of baseball fandom that's, like, hyper online and stuff, but I feel like there has been a little bit of a redemption movement with Joe Buck. Like, people really hated his announcing, and so they gave him, like, a lot of crap. And then I feel like there was kind of a backlash of fans being like, okay, he's not that bad. Like, come on, guys. Which I think is fair. Like, I'm not going to, like, spew vitriol. I have nothing against the man. Like,
no. Like, he's just a dude. Like
he's just fine. Like, he's a dude. Like,
I think he's better at football.
Yeah, I have heard that. But...
And, you know, he doesn't take himself too seriously, and he does have a sense of humor, but he's just, I guess you need somebody, like, vanilla for a national broadcast.
But, like, it's, vanilla is, like, so bad for a baseball booth, because, like, part of what makes, like, Gary, Keith, and Ron so good is that, like, Keith especially is, like, very, like, off-collar sometimes, yeah. And, like, that's good, though, because, like, yeah, even though he can occasionally, like, go too far and put his foot in his mouth a little bit, it's good, though, because you kind of need to have it's a little bit of character. It's entertainment. Like, baseball has a lot more lulls in between plays that you need to fill with, like, some sort of entertainment, and, like, that's what I think a lot of these dudes who, like, go across sports, like, they don't really, like, understand that baseball uniqueness all that well, because, like, I feel like, I mean, like, I could be totally off base here because I don't watch other sports all that often, but, like, football and hockey especially are just, like, constant, so it's just, like, all you're doing is literally just saying what's happening the whole time, yeah. And there's not really much room for anything else, but, like, in baseball, you know, you can take out, like, Gary Heath and Ron, take out the baseball cards and tell stories. Like, you need that stuff. And the national booths just don't have that stuff. No. Instead, they fill it with, like, weird mid-inning sideline reporting that no one wants.
I know. Well, somebody, my apologies to whoever said it on Twitter, they said they should have, like, one of the local... like, have a guest of, like, one of the local broadcasts in the booth, like, on the national stage.
And I think that would mean a lot. Like, it would make a huge difference.
Like, in hockey, it's probably because they're too cheap to pay for the rights, because nobody cares about hockey on the national level. But the first round of the playoffs is your local guys. Like, Sam and Joe call the playoffs. And it's so comforting, because these are the guys you watch all year, and then, like, when you're dying, you want that comforting voice there, yeah, guiding you through it, and it makes such a big difference.
Like, I've seen a lot of, because you know, Ron Darling does TBS, so he does national playoff games, and I've seen people on Twitter who, like, aren't familiar with him in the Mets booth complain about his calling.
He's so different on a national level.
Exactly, and, like, I didn't realize it until, you know, I watched some broadcasts with him in it in the national booth. It sounds so different. He's, like, not nearly as good because he doesn't the camaraderie that he has with Gary and Keith. And he's kind of
that chemistry makes a difference.
Exactly. And he's kind of the more even-keeled guy. He's almost like the Keith Hernandez foil. And so, like, with Keith, he works so well. But if you take him away from Keith, it's kind of like, meh.
Yeah, and it kind of sucks because he is so smart and he does have such a head for the game. But somehow it doesn't come across on the national level.
Right. And but I feel like if he were, I mean, we did experience it a little bit in 2015, and I think he did a great job in those playoffs because he came with the Mets knowledge, with having watched that team all year long. He knows to the level that the National guys don't necessarily know.
Yeah. And then they did the SNY post game, and he was back with his guys, with Gary and Keith. So he was kind of like in his element at that point.
Right. And it's not just about, like, you know, these guys, like, I'm not saying that they're, like, bad at their jobs. Like, they're professionals for the most part. They do their research and they know, like, they know the stats. They know that, you know, like, they know that, like, a certain pitcher struggled against a certain hitter. They know the splits. They can go on Fangraphs and look it up. It's like that type of stuff. They're usually prepared, but like there's no substitute for having like lived and died with a team for an entire season. And now they're in the postseason. Like you understand the cadence that season took that you can't understand on a level unless you watched that team every day, which obviously the National booth guys are not capable of doing, nor should be expected of them. But that's why having Ron there would make a huge difference if it were the Mets.
Like, if they showed some emotion, like, getting excited, like, this is... You can't just be even keel when it's a National game for, like, all the marbles. Like, I know that, you know, they have to stay impartial and whatever, but... You have Smoltz, like, just sitting there miserable the whole game. Like, how is that selling your product?
Yeah. The quintessential, like, example I always think about when I think about this issue is, like, do you remember the National call of the Endy Chavez catch in the 2006 NLCS? It was so boring and bland, and it was...
Oh, yes, somebody just brought that up, yes.
It was like, but, like, when we were watching, it was the most spectacular catch I had ever seen. And he doubled the guy off first and saved the Mets season in that moment right there. I mean, obviously, like, Mets fans have litigated and over again, like, it would have been a bigger deal in the greater baseball lexicon if the Mets had gone on to win that series. Nonetheless, it was amazing. It was an incredible play. And then the stark contrast between the Gary Cohen radio call and that is the best example I can think of when you think of the difference between a local booth and the National booth when the playoffs are happening.
And that's what, you know, in hockey, that's what Doc Emmerich would do. Like, he was just a fan of the game. He got excited no matter what happened. Like, he wasn't rooting for anybody. No, he was just excited that good hockey was being played and he was there to call it. And that's all I ask. You're here to watch the best baseball players in the world do incredible things, and if you can't get excited for that, like, reevaluate your life, John Smoltz.
Yeah, what are you doing here? Why is this your job then?
Yeah, why do you want to sit there and complain and be miserable the whole time?
Why do the people that hold the highest positions in baseball not like baseball?
I know, why do they have to ruin it for everybody?
Oh boy.
Yeah, again, this is what it all comes down to. They ruin it for everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe that should be the title of the podcast. there was a Simpsons quote. It's either one of the twins, either Sherry or Terry. She yells at Bart, "You ruined everything, you ruiner." Like, that's basically Rob Manfred.
That is basically Rob Manfred. He does ruin everything.
You ruiner.
But... we will end the show on a happy note, like we always do, despite whatever Rob Manfred does, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about...
He can't ruin our walk-off win.
He cannot. No one can. where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Linda Cervich has a very, very special walk-off win this week. Tell us all about it.
So I sat down to lunch one day at my desk and, you know, I took out my phone. I see if I have a text message. It's from Kellyanne saying, "I know if you have a lot going on with, like, the move and everything." But she was like, and there's a picture attached to the text message. And she was like, "But can I interest you in a kitten?" And oh my God, this kitten, it looked exactly like my childhood cat Birdie, like the calico, the markings. It's if my cat Birdie had a kitten with Jakey, because then she has like a little mustache on her that Jakey has, like a little brown mustache by her nose, then that's the same marking Jakey has. So I texted my sister because her cat died in May, and I said, you know, my friend has a kitten, do you want it? And she said yes, but her husband said no. So I was like, oh, this kitten. So I told Kellyanne I would take the kitten. So Kellyanne came home last Friday with the kitten. She enjoyed her road trip from New Jersey. She played her classical music to keep her calm.
That is the most Kellyanne sentence I have ever heard in my life.
She was like, I drove slow, I played classical music, she slept the whole time. She has more toys than I do furniture at this point, and you can probably hear her because she's been crying the whole time. She's been scratching at the door. So I ended up keeping her. And her name, which podcast dad Brian came up with, is Madison Shay Gatto. So it combines my love of the Mets and Rangers, because then her initials are MSG, for Madison Square Garden. I've been calling her Miss Gatto in the morning. I'm like, oh, what's the matter, Miss Gatto? You hungry?
She's so cute.
She is. She's a little snuggler. She hates not being with me, and that's why she's beside herself right now. Because then my sister came the next day to visit her and just to see her, and she brought the kids, and she was like, I can't take her from you. Like, the first night, she was never scared. She came right out. She explored. She never hid. She snuggled right away. I was like, oh, my little girl. But now I haven't bought Jakey over yet, so I'm kind of nervous how that's going to go.
Crossing my fingers that they love each other and become BFFs. It'll be like a Willow Mac situation.
I know, that's what I want. I just want a Willow Mac situation, but with my Jakey, because I'm...
Willow and Mac are serious pet goals.
Yeah, they are just too cute. And that's what I want. And I miss Jakey, because I've been staying at my new place because I didn't want to leave her by herself. So I have, like, no furniture. I was sleeping on an arrow bed, and, but yeah, so, like, I spent my first night in my new home with my new kitten, and she was snuggled at the bottom of the bed, and, she's trained me well. When she wants me to get up, she starts chewing on my hair. I'm like, okay, now I know you're hungry. Like, I'm up, I'm up. Oh, she's too smart for her own good, so, but she's the cutest little meow too, and I feel so bad that I have her locked out. I just want to let her in the room, but because I was gonna podcast like out in the living room so I could have the TV on, but she was just running across the keyboard, playing with the wires, biting on everything. I'm like, yeah, this isn't gonna work. So
I was gonna say, we don't care if there are cat sound effects on the podcast. Lord knows it would not be the first pet appearance on the podcast. However, chewing the wires might be an issue, and running on the keyboard.
I was gonna say, like, I had an issue with Amazon again. So I was chatting with them and they were looking into my issue, and she ran across the keyboard and exited out of the chat. I didn't need a repeat of that with the podcast where all of a sudden, like, it's like, where'd Linda go?
Did you see, this is kind of a side note, but I think our audience will find this amusing. Did you see Nick Francota's tweet about how he was chatting with, like, a Best Buy customer service agent?
Oh, yes.
It was Mike Trout. And it was like, what can't he do?
Yeah, that was good. But yeah, so sorry, but Miss Gatto will not be making her podcast debut today, although unless my microphone picked up her crying, which is very possible because she's been crying this whole time.
Someday she will make her podcast appearance, maybe when she's a little older.
I have no doubt she's gonna make her podcast debut, because like I said, she hates when I'm not there, and she gets so upset, and me being me, I get upset when she's upset, and then I just cave into her. I'm gonna be such a bad parent. Like, okay, you cried here, take whatever you want.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what you're supposed to do, and if it gets them into bad habits.
She but knows yes. she's cute and can get away with it.
Yes, and she uses it to her advantage. She's so smart. And they know how to train you. Like, every time I go in the kitchen, she comes trotting in right behind me. I'm like, I just fed you an hour ago. How are you hungry again? But no, I wouldn't have it any other way. So that's my welcome point. And Kellyanne was my first guest at my new home.
Yay!
So it was a big week. Yay! I have a new home, a new kitten, and I'm finally getting into a new, because I didn't have a closet, so I was torn between two spots. Like, I would have to go home to my parents' house, get ready for work, then go to work, then come back to this place. So I was very unsettled for a while. I'm still unsettled, but we're getting there. Slowly but surely, don't ever move during a pandemic.
Yeah, it sucks.
Final advice.
Can confirm.
Yes.
Except I, luckily, like, I didn't have to furnish the entire place. I had furniture already, but I was moving.
You're so lucky.
From a storage unit, but I did recently buy new furniture that's going to be delivered in December, thanks to COVID.
I was going to say, was it on back order?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, this place is, like, not to get too into it, but the place I ordered the furniture from is, like, it's kind of a fancier place. I decided I'm past the IKEA stage of my life, and so
invest, it's fine.
Yeah, and so, like, their furniture, like, essentially all of it is made to order because it's, like, pretty customizable what you can get. Okay. And so, like, it takes a long time for it to come because it's not like it's like, here is this existing table that we will then ship to you. It's like, we will make the table and then ship you the table.
Okay, so that's a little more understandable. For me, it's just couldn't find furniture anywhere.
Yep. And obviously order. COVID has exacerbated everything, so.
Yep. But no, it's a walk-off win. It's a happy walk-off win.
Yeah. So. New kitty. Madison Shea Gatto. Oh, you kitty. Cat.
Yeah, maybe you should tweet a picture of her tomorrow.
Yes, we will. Yes, we should do that. Let's tweet.
I'll send you a picture.
We will tweet a picture of her tomorrow when the episode goes up so that you guys can see the new adorable cat. Calicos are my favorite because I'm a nerd and I love genetics, and they are the perfect example of X-linked mosaicism. So it's great. Only female cats can be calico.
Yeah, I find that so weird.
Biology lesson, everyone. So cats' sex chromosomes work just like humans, where the boys are XY and the girls are XX. And so because this happens in humans too, there's a process called X inactivation that happens in females. Because we have two of the same sex chromosome, we can't have them both active at the same time, because then you'll have a problem called gene dosage, which is basically the problem in Down syndrome, because people with Down syndrome have an extra chromosome that is not naturally there. So they basically have, like, too much expression of all their genes from that chromosome. And that would happen with the X chromosome in all women if we didn't undergo this process called X inactivation, where basically only one of our X chromosomes is active in each of our cells, and it's random. So it's not the same one. It's basically a 50-50 chance for each cell. Either one of your X's is active and one is inactive. So in calico cats, the reason they have that fun pattern with their fur is because of different X chromosomes being active in different cells, and then they express different fur colors in their different cells. And that's why boy cats can't be calico, because one X. So the same X chromosome in all boy cats is expressed in all their cells.
That makes sense. Interesting.
Yeah, fun genetics lesson. Genetics 101 for all of our listeners. Yay.
See, look at Maddie's educating the people.
She is. She's already a star.
She is.
But yeah, I'm very excited for you. She's so cute. My walk-off win for this week is, I kind of alluded to it earlier in the podcast, but Thursday of this week is my birthday, and I'm turning 30 this year. So
yes,
it's kind of
happy birthday.
Thank you. It's kind of a milestone birthday for me. But, you know, like, having any sort of, and obviously we've run into this with weddings and all sorts of other special occasions, like having any sort of, like, party or anything with COVID is, you know, like, you can't really gather right now. So I wanted to figure out a way to celebrate my birthday, but do it as safely as possible. And so my close friends from college and I did like a socially distant birthday celebration where we went on a hike in Patapsco Valley State Park in Maryland.
And then we went to a brewery afterwards that's on a farm. It's called Manor Hill Brewing in Ellicott City, Maryland, if you live in the area of, like, Baltimore or even D.C., because it wasn't that far from here. It was maybe, like, 50-minute drive, but it's a little bit closer to Baltimore, but a lot of my friends live in Baltimore, Delaware, so it was less of a trek for them. But, yeah, we went to this brewery called Manor Hill Brewing in Ellicott City, and it's on a farm, so they have, like, acres and acres of space to spread out. They have a few outdoor tables, but like most of it is just like this giant field where you can just put like lawn chairs and blankets down and sit out, and then you like you put your mask on, you go to the brewery, like to the bar, and you get your beer, and then you bring it to your spot, and then you can drink it. So it all felt like very safe. Like our group kind of sat like in our little, like right next to each other on blankets within our household pods. But then like people who like were roommates or lived together, like sat like on the same blanket, but then like our little small pods were like distanced apart. But then like our whole big group was like nowhere near any of the other groups. So it all felt very safe. And during the hike, we had our masks on the whole time, you know, constantly like washing hands, sanitizing, like all that. So it felt, the whole thing felt like very, you know, safe and, but still a super, super fun day. The weather was gorgeous. I couldn't have asked for better, perfect fall weather. It was like 71 degrees and partly cloudy. It was beautiful. Beautiful day for a hike. Beautiful day to sit out, have some beer. The beer was delicious. I got too drunk because my friends kept buying me more beers. But it was fine. Lovely nonetheless. I suffered for it the next day, but that day was a great day. So yeah, I had so much fun. And yeah, like I said, if you're in the area, I can't recommend Manor Hill enough. They are really taking COVID precautions seriously, but their beer is also delicious, and you can easily socially distance and get out of the house a little bit, even if it isn't quite the same. So I was so happy to just be able to spend some socially distant face-to-face time with a lot of people who I haven't seen in a really long time.
Oh, good. Glad you had a good day.
So that was happy. And then this weekend, my parents are coming to go out to dinner, just to have like a little family birthday celebration.
Oh, nice. So
that'll be fun. And I made sure I found a restaurant that has like a patio that's like away from the street and like not, you know, like made sure that it was like a COVID conscious restaurant, because honestly some of the restaurants in my neighborhood I definitely wouldn't feel comfortable eating at, even outside, because like the outside area is like right on the sidewalk, so it's like there's all these people walking by, so like
what's yeah
the point? So I wanted to make sure I found a restaurant that had like a rooftop deck or like something that's like away from the street, and I managed to find them, I think. So we will hopefully feel good about eating outside.
Well, your 30th birthday will be a memorable one.
Exactly, it will be. Because it's a pandemic, but also because literally it is almost to the day that the Wilpons will officially no longer be Mets owners.
So you should celebrate and go out and go hard.
Yeah, happy birthday to me. The Wilpon era is over. Maybe I'll name the episode that. There have been like several things.
Yes. Oh, that's a good one.
Happy birthday to me. The Wilpon era
is over. I like that.
So that does it for the show this week. You should go to AmazingAvenue.com and check out all of our fantastic content. We are in off-season mode, but the off-season plan contest should be up soon. I know that Rich wrote a piece about like stealing players from our NL East rivals, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we've got a ton of cool content for you while baseball is away once more. You should check all of that out and check out our whole entire Amazing Avenue suite of podcasts. Subscribe to the show and leave a rate and review. It really helps people find it. You can follow the site Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servish.
And you can find Kellyanne in the Amazing Avenue comments, La Roma Bella, moderating all of your comments, so don't leave anything nasty for her. But you
don't
should
make her job harder.
Yeah, don't make her job harder, guys. But you should join us on the site and in the comments section. We love having all of you there. But yeah, the original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga, and Let's Go Mets. Don't forget, there is no crying in the comments. See you guys.